We use online communications for all kinds of purposes, some important, some kind of frivolous. The medical community has been looking at online communication to treat patients who live far away or who are in an underserved area. But it's tricky. There are concerns about acceptance. There are concerns about insurance coverage. There are concerns about privacy and security risks. Joining us to talk about online healthcare is Dr. Chad Elimudel. He's an assistant professor at the University of Michigan and a member of the Institute for Healthcare Policy and Innovation. He's also the director of telehealth for the urology department at U of M. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
That's
Thank
a lot of titles, by the way.
Yeah, stay busy.
All right. First, let's start with some basic stuff. What is telehealth? Just a video link or are patients' vitals communicated live? What does it do?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think the definition has changed over time. But more broadly, for all intents and purposes, telehealth is defined as using telecommunications technology to diagnose, manage, and treat human disease. And so the telehealth is also synonymous with telemedicine, with virtual care, digital health, e-health, all those words are kind of used interchangeably. And so telehealth includes really any form of telecommunications technology. So it could include using a telephone to communicate with a patient. It could include using a patient portal messaging system, could include live video conferencing or using wearables to check vitals.
So what did we need this? What's wrong with some face-to-face contact?
Oh, absolutely nothing wrong with face-to-face contact. And I think there's a lot of context and need for face-to-face contact. I think one of the things that is occurring in our society is that we have, we're using a lot more of a lot more telecommunications for every other aspect of our society. So there's some limitations to the standard way that patients are seen in clinics. And so telehealth offers an improvement in efficiency of care, which is much needed for our healthcare system.
I'm part of the baby boomer generation, and some of my older colleagues in this cohort are not always really up to speed on things like this. What's the acceptance been like on dealing with this?
Yeah, the acceptance has actually been great. And I think that it was a common misconception that, so I've been conducting video consultations with patients since 2016. And it's a common misconception that the older generation is going to try to avoid it. But what we found is that there's a lot of reasons that the older generation likes it. And number one is that they're much more familiar with technology than they have been in the past. I have a lot of patients that FaceTime with their grandkids, and so they're familiar with it. Number two is that sometimes they have even more limitations than younger generations to get into clinics, in terms of transportation and so forth. And so for those reasons, it's been used. And I'd say one more reason is that they tend to have more appointments with healthcare providers than younger folks too. So I think for all those reasons, it's been pretty well accepted. There's always a population of folks that prefer to come in, and I think that that's important. And one of the reasons why telehealth is always left as an option rather than a mandatory way of delivering care.
At the same time, there are some pretty underserved areas in the state of Michigan, especially when it comes to specialized care like yours. Yeah. How important is it in serving that population that isn't near a specialist?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think that that's the biggest win for telehealth is being able to connect patients that are in rural areas to specialists. And so there's some patients, I'm a physician at University of Michigan, so there's some patients that come to see me from 8 hours away. And sometimes after an eight-hour drive, they're essentially having a 15-minute consultation with me and then driving 8 hours back. And so there's a lot of opportunity for telehealth to remove that distance and to connect patients to to physicians and other healthcare providers more easily.
You talked about a number of different media to connect with a patient that's off-site. What are the limits of diagnosing a patient via online video or on telephone or any other kind of communication method?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I think that the limitations are really about the clinical condition. There's some conditions that in every specialty, there's some conditions that we frankly don't need a physical exam for. I'll give you a good example. I treat kidney stones. And so the majority of my treatment decisions about kidney stones are around what does it look like on a CT scan? And then I talk to the patient about the operation that they need. There are other reasons why, there are many other conditions where a patient needs to come in, and mainly if they need a physical exam or if they need a diagnostic procedure that's performed in the office. And so my greater vision with telehealth is that we eventually it's so well integrated into our healthcare system that we eventually reach a point where in-person care is actually option B. So if option A would be option A would be some sort of virtual connection, but the patient only needing to come in if they are meeting a physician for the first time, or they need a diagnostic test, or they need a physical exam.
We mentioned insurance or other kind of healthcare coverage. Who covers telehealth and similar systems, and who does not?
That's a very good question. And so, interestingly, telehealth has been covered by major payers, including the Medicare program, for decades. It really has been around for a long time. The problem is that there has been a barrier to how that reimbursement occurs. And so, and the idea is that initially when Medicare was covering telehealth, they required patients to, they couldn't connect from home, and they needed to travel to a medical facility, and that medical facility needed to be in a health professional shortage area. So even though it's been around for such a long time, less than 1% of rural Medicare patients have ever used a telehealth service. And so that speaks a lot to how big that barrier was, even though it was reimbursed. So what we're seeing now is that there's been a dramatic change in the way that policymakers are viewing telehealth. And so they're viewing telehealth as an important part of healthcare delivery. And so major commercial payers in the state of Michigan have started to cover video consultations from home, actually at the same rate as an in-person visit. So that's changed a lot of momentum. At the national level, the Medicare program has re-examined its historical policies on coverage. And in 2020, Medicare Advantage patients will be able to connect from home. And there's a lot of momentum to move original Medicare patients in that direction too. So a lot of behaviors in healthcare tend to follow reimbursement. And this is one area where reimbursement is changing in a favorable way towards telehealth.
I read in the AMA Journal of Ethics that there are significant privacy and security risks in telehealth systems. What kind of risks?
Yeah, so I think, you know, there's not, in a lot of ways, telehealth is the Wild West. I think that we don't know a lot about the technologies that are out there. We know that there are a lot of additional securities that are required for any sort of transfer of health information. And so that's a big concern of health systems, a big concern of patients as well. In fact, are part of our research group. We've done focus groups with patients, and they've expressed that concern. So, At Michigan Medicine, when we're performing video consultations with patients, we're actually using the same technology that we use to send patients results and send patients messages. So there is a lot of security that's built into it, which is extraordinarily important in this era.
Is that common everywhere for places using telehealth? I mean, some kind of encryption or some other way of securing the data?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, I can't speak for all institutions and all modalities, but I'll say that any company that's starting a telehealth company, that's probably number one priority for them.
What more needs to be done to make any telehealth system a usable and safe tool for patients and doctors?
Yeah, so I think the biggest challenge that we face with telehealth is I think most people believe it has good potential, and I think that everyone's sort of on board with telehealth, but the biggest challenge that we face is actually in implementation. So implementing telehealth involves changing physician workflow. It involves acceptance from patients. So there's a lot of challenges on that side. And it's the same types of challenges that you run with implementing any sort of new clinical innovation or some new guideline. And so it involves dissemination, education, practice, rework, redesign, those types of elements.
How long before it is option A?
I'd give it 5 years.
5 years?
Yeah, I really think so. There's been, in the last 5 years, there's probably been more momentum for telehealth than there has been in the last 20 years. At our health system particularly, it's actually one of our biggest strategic goals is to expand the use of telehealth. So I would estimate that within 5 years, it's not going to be fully integrated into our care, but I'm assuming that at least one of your doctors that you see will offer it as an option for you.
Chad Ailey-Moodle is the director of telehealth for the urology department at the University of Michigan. He's also, of course, a urologist and an assistant professor and member of the Institute for Healthcare Policy and Innovation. Did I forget get all your titles?
You got them.
Thanks very much for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.